You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Last summer, the federal government announced plans to reduce the amount of health care it was going to provide to refugee claimants. Late last month, the organization Canadian Doctors for Refugee Care announced that they were going to join in a court challenge to the program cuts. They're asking the federal court to declare the cuts unconstitutional. Joining us to discuss the case is Dr. Alexander Cordarella. He's a doctor at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, and he's joining me by phone this morning. Hello, Alexander.
Hello.
Now, since the health care cuts went into place last year, can you tell us a bit about the effect it's had on refugees?
Absolutely. So one of the things that CDRC has guaranteed is that we're going to monitor and follow up all the effects of these changes. And what we've seen has been basically two major effects. The first is, let's say, the intended effects of the cuts, whereby a number of people who have come from countries that are labeled more safe, or people whose claims have been rejected and are waiting through the final stages of their appeals, have been unable to get health care. So we've seen, for example, people with unable to get prenatal care, unable to get vaccines for their children. We've seen claimants who are about to go blind that desperately needed a surgery that weren't able to get it covered. And then the second part that we've really seen has been, really has come out of the confusion, because these laws, these new rules are not very clear at all. For example, many of the doctors in the Greater Toronto area, in walk-in clinics, have refused to see any patients with any IFH coverage because the new rules are so confusing and so difficult to understand. As a result, many people that we can't even track at this point are being turned away or asked to pay cash for their visits, even though those people are fully entitled to coverage still under the IFH program.
And I guess that just in a sense mirrors what happens in the rest of a refugee claimant's life, where they're trying to understand rules in this new country and how they can stay and what legal hoops they have to jump through. But now it's been extended to healthcare.
Absolutely. So you're taking somebody who doesn't understand the system, who doesn't know what's going on, and if you ask them to pay cash or if you tell them they can't be seen, they're not going to push it. And often that's what we've seen happen.
Now, as you mentioned, the changes don't affect refugees equally. What is the situation for refugees from designated countries of origin? And so we think, for example, of refugees from Mexico, which has recently been designated, or from Hungary, which is a designated country. What's the situation with refugees from those countries?
There's a list of countries, like you've said, and anyone on this list is entitled to only what's called public health and public safety coverage. They'll only be covered for diseases that could potentially cause significant harm to people in the rest of the society. So what this means is that anyone who's come after December 15th from one of these countries, and you were right to point out Mexico being a country that has produced many successful claimants, but many unsuccessful claimants as well, any of those people, really, if they go into an emergency room or if they need prenatal care, unless it falls under this strict list of diseases that may cause significant public burden, they will receive no coverage whatsoever. They're not entitled to any lab tests. They're not entitled to any medications. And really, it's an incredibly restrictive amount of care that we can provide. And we feel completely powerless for people that are going through the system to help them in any way.
So you come from a country like Mexico, which I think we all know is a pretty dangerous country. Our government says it's a safe country. You come here to run away from danger, and then you have a disease that we're worried we might get, and then you can get treatment.
Exactly. And so that's where it becomes incredibly difficult as well, because they haven't set out rules about how we're supposed to treat people, even when we suspect that they may have one of these diseases or disorders. For example, if somebody comes with tuberculosis, which is not that uncommon, we're supposedly entitled to treat them. But it's very hard to pick that up, and certainly any respiratory disease could look like that, and we're not sure how that's going to be covered. But to us, it just doesn't make sense that somebody who's here, who's, as you're saying, who's come from a country who's where there is problems, where there is violence, they're going through the process, and they come into our clinic and we can't see them and we can't treat them. All we're really asking is to be able to do what we've been trained to do. There are people living legally in the city of Toronto who have no access to health care. It's the same thing for Vancouver. It's the same thing across the country. And all we're asking is to be able to provide them the health care that we've been trained to do.
Now, you mentioned that refugees are scared to come forward and get health care. On the other side of things, have you heard that some doctors may be refusing treatment to refugees also?
So again, it's twofold. There are a number of doctors that, even those that have valid coverage, because the rules are so confusing, have told their clinics to just turn people away or ask them to pay cash. So we've seen a number of instances in that. I don't think it's malicious on the part of the doctor. I really think it's just confusion around the new rule. Most of the time, we're able to find physicians that are willing to cover costs. But the problem is that only covers a portion of what a refugee has to pay when they come to the hospital or to a clinic. For example, at St. Michael's Hospital or any hospital, you're looking at fees of $200 upwards dollars just to register to see a doctor. Or we had a case where we were trying to arrange prenatal care and care for a cesarean section for a woman who'd arrived who was pregnant. In those instances, even though the doctors were willing to waive their fees, the patient was still looking at thousands of dollars in administrative fees alone. So even in the instances where the doctors are willing to see the patients, that doesn't remove the cost burden on the part of the refugee applicant.
I think that's one interesting aspect of the media coverage of this is that when it came out, they were, you know, refugees weren't going to get medical care. But I think many people reading that wouldn't understand the cost of the care, because we're in the fortunate position in Canada where we don't know really how much it costs.
Many of us doctors, we really didn't even have a good understanding of what the costs were until you really start to look at it. And that's what's as shocking more than anything else, is that somebody who comes in, even if they need one blood test as a follow-up appointment, could be looking at between $50 in a walk-in clinic to $200 in a hospital just to get that test. So the hurdles are enormous. Often with people with diabetes or people with high blood pressure need to come in for those checks fairly regularly, even if they're not seeing a doctor every time.
Now, what have any of the provinces stepped up to help with the cost of medical care?
We have seen some indication from certain provinces. For example, Quebec was the first to really step up and say that they would cover everything that would be missing, to be withdrawn from the IFH system. But for the most part, most provinces, except for stepping in case by case, and Manitoba more recently doing more, there just hasn't been that kind of guarantee. I mean, Ontario has said that they're not going to let people die, but what that means and how that's going to take shape, it hasn't come to light. And so despite all of that, we've seen people being affected and people being afraid to come to the hospital, people turning people away. And unfortunately, that'll continue to happen until all the previous interim federal health program is reinstated.
What is the court challenge that was announced last month?
So the court challenge is from the Canadian Association of Refugee Lawyers. The Canadian Doctors for Refugee Care is a litigant, as well as three patients that have been chosen. Essentially, it's making the stipulation that the new cuts to the interim federal health program violate a number of aspects of the Charter of Rights and Freedom, including the safety from cruel and unusual punishment, the safety from for rights to life and security, as well as it's making some arguments that were in violation of some of the international treaties that we've signed. And it's also making the claim that we are, in this instance, discriminating on people based on the country that they come from. So there's a number of different arguments that are being made. Our major concern is that this is going to take years to work its way through the courts, and we're already seeing many, many refugee applicants being affected by these changes, and we really need these cuts reversed before that point.
Now, I understand there's going to be another National Day of Action later this spring. There was one last year. What's being planned for this one?
What we're planning for the National Day of Action, which will be June 17th, 2013, are going to be speakers and demonstrations in a dozen cities across the country. Right now we're in the organizing stages, but last year's event was incredibly successful, bringing out doctors, nurses, a variety of people from different, everyone from the different healthcare professions is invited to come out and really just show their solidarity for that one thing, which is that we're asking that the cuts to the interim federal health program be reversed and really just give these refugee applicants a voice.
What can people do to support refugees and to protest the cuts to healthcare?
There's a number of things people can do. First of all, we're encouraging everyone to either contact their MP or contact their MPP and ask them to reverse these cuts. The good thing about what can happen is that because this wasn't done through a specific law, but rather it was done through an order in council from the government, is that it can be reversed very quickly and very easily by the minister himself. So the more pressure that people are able to put by calling, making meetings with their MPs, MPPs, the more they can do. Certainly, if any of your listeners work in the healthcare field and they would come across anyone who's been denied care as a result of these cuts, we would strongly encourage them to get in touch with the Canadian Doctors for Refugee Care, and because we're really trying to advocate for each of the cases individually. And certainly, if you can come out to the National Day of Action, that'd be wonderful too.
Thanks so much for talking to me this morning, Alexander.
Thank you for having me on the show.
I've been speaking with Dr. Alexander Cordarella. He's a physician with Canadian Doctors for Refugee Care, and he joined us by phone from Toronto.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@cooperadio.org.